So today we continue, actually we complete is the right word, our series on First Unity's new core values. And as we know, and we've been affirming every week, our vision is our vision for the entire world, and it's big. So would you affirm our vision with me, either from the screen or from your bulletin, together and with energy, ready? In oneness of spirit, we celebrate a world awakened to infinite possibilities. And then we come to our mission, which is the way that we are going to help bring this about. So would you affirm that with me? We are a vibrant, inclusive spiritual community, enriching lives through positive prayer, education, and service. And then finally, our core values from the top and clockwise together: spirit-led, love, oneness, acceptance, welcoming, and spiritual growth. And today, before you leave the sanctuary, or as you leave the sanctuary, we have a copy of all of the definitions and core values that the core writing team has generated. It is not perfect. It's a working draft. We already have some notes for corrections for the next printing, but we want you to take one if you'd like to have one. It has all the work on there. So it would be a good thing to just take into meditation, do a core value a day, and just really work with them, because I think we have some wonderful core values. So today we are working with the last core value of spiritual growth. And speaking of growth, Bob and I have a 3-year-old grandson who's a joy to watch him grow. And I had him this week, we had him this week, and he's a boy who loves animals. He's into dinosaurs, and he's into frogs, and he's into wolves. This week it was wolves. So I mentioned to him that there was a wildlife wolf sanctuary close by. And of course, immediately, "I want to go, Grandma, I want to go." And I said, "Well, honey, you're a little young. When you grow up just a little bit, we'll take you." So he was okay with that. He left the room. He came back about 2 seconds later, had his jacket in his arm, and he goes, "Grandma, I growed enough. I'm ready to go. Let's see the wolves." So you remember what it was, and those of you who had kids and grandkids, kids just cannot wait to grow up, can they? Just cannot wait. There are a few of them there who cannot wait. So another story that you may have heard was about a mom who was driving her 4-year-old to preschool one day. Now, this mom happened to be a doctor, and she left her stethoscope on the back seat. So she's driving along, and she looked in the rearview mirror, and there was her little girl playing with it and fascinated with it. Well, it just flashed into this mom's heart, "Oh my goodness, look at her. I think she's going to grow up to be a doctor just like me, and won't that be wonderful?" And the next moment, she heard voices in the back seat, or I should say a voice, and she looked back, and the little girl was holding the stethoscope up in the air, and she was saying, "Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order?" Not exactly what mom had in mind, you know? Sometimes it goes that way. Not exactly. So here's the question. Here's our question of the day. What do you want to be when you grow up? Now, I'm not talking about career growth or physical growth. I'm talking today about, of course, our last core value, spiritual growth. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. We had a little trouble. The core value team struggled a little bit with this one. Can you all hear me? Am I good? No? Not so? I don't know what's the matter here. Okay, I'll use this while I'm here. Better? Okay, the core value team struggled a little bit with the definitions about spiritual growth because it is so complex. It really is. It's a big deal. And we know that Charles Fillmore, well, first of all, let me back up a little bit. Unity teaches that spiritual growth is not a one-time conversion, but it's a gradual process. It's an evolution, we might say. And Charles Fillmore wrote, "Because growth is a law of life, we cannot receive the understanding of the whole Spirit of God all at once." And Jesus was well aware of this, that spiritual understanding has to be a gradual process. In Mark 28, he says, "The earth produces of itself, first the blade, then the head, then the full grain in the ear, all in due time, not overnight." Well, darn. We live in an instant waffle society, do we not? We like things all at once. We don't like to wait for things. And so here's our definition. Spiritual growth is a lifelong process of bringing one's mind in harmony with the absolute goodness of God. The absolute goodness of God. Now, the Anglo-Saxon word for our English word God was actually the good. That's what it meant. God means the good. So goodness is the essence of God's nature. Spirit is absolute perfection and wholeness. In 1 John 1-5, we read, God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. And in Psalm 52:1, we read, the goodness of God endureth continually. It's never ending. Our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, writes, God as principle is absolute good expressed in all creation. God as goodness is approachable, available, and usable to all who draw nigh to him. In other words, to all who draw near to him. Now, there's a Hebrew character who really becomes aware of this in a very dramatic way. And I'm talking about the character Jacob. Some of you may remember that Jacob and Esau are twin brothers, and Esau is the older brother. Esau is the hairier one on the left, okay? He's the man's man, the hunter, and Jacob is more reflective and internal. At any rate, they are the twins of Isaac and Rebekah. Jacob conspires with his mother to trick Isaac into bestowing on him the blessing and all the rights due to the firstborn son. And that would be all the land and all the property and everything. And Esau, you might imagine, was not too happy with this event. And he said that he was going to seek revenge, and he vowed to kill Jacob. So as our story, the part of it I'm going to read to you, unfolds, Jacob is on the run. He is fleeing from Esau's wrath. He's traveling to the house of his uncle Laban in Upper Mesopotamia. So we read in Genesis 28:10-17, Jacob left Beersheba and came to a certain place, staying there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down. Now, it's important to realize here that Jacob, through his own acts of deceit, has been forced to leave all of his material comforts behind. He doesn't even have a pillow on which to lie his head. All his cherished possessions, his money, and his status, all he's leaving behind because of his own acts. So our story continues in Genesis 28 verses 10 to 17. And Jacob dreamed that there was a ladder set up in the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac, your father. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, in a good way, the dust of the earth spread abroad to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth will be blessed by you and your offspring. Know, this is an important part, know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and bring you back to this land. Then Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. The King James Version says, and I knew it not. And Jacob was afraid and said, how awesome is this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Now, this image of Jacob's ladder is really compelling. It's compelling to Jacob, and it's compelling for us. His vision of the ladder is that it had a base on the earth and the top in heaven. And the angels went up and down, ascending and descending on all the rungs. Now, Jacob's dream can be interpreted in many ways, but the most obvious one is that God is omnipresent. The Hebrews at that time believed that they carried God around in the Ark of the Covenant. And he's learning here that God is in this place. God is everywhere. Surely the presence of the Lord was in this place, and I knew it not. Now, that's a shock to him at first from the way he's been taught, but the shock soon changes to a feeling of great peace and assurance, and Jacob is forever transformed by this moment. The ladder now ascends to heaven, and we know that heaven is where? Within, absolutely. And so really, the gate to the kingdom of heaven is our own consciousness. And the angels in the Bible almost always represent divine messengers. Remember Gabriel coming to Mary and many other examples. And notice as these angels go up and down, they are connecting heaven and earth. And I believe we are meant to do exactly the same. It has been said that some people are so spiritual that they're no earthly good. Have you heard that? And I think it's true sometimes, but today's daily word nailed it. Mary, you read it beautifully. We are not here in human form to avoid the world, but to transform it. We are here to express the divine on this earth. And Bible scholar Ed Townley writes, Jacob ladder shows we move consistently upward, higher in consciousness, as we become more and more the expressions of our true spirit nature. And remember, our true spirit nature is the nature of godness, of goodness, and the nature of all of our spiritual powers and abilities. In her book, Divine Audacity, Dare to Be the Light of the World, Linda Martell-Whitsitt writes, all our spiritual powers are inherent. They are natural to us, not acquired, never subject to depletion, always existent. They exist in potential until they are recognized, activated, and developed. So maybe, after all, spiritual growth is our own journey to develop awareness of the omnipresent goodness of God, and also to develop and express our own spiritual powers. And what does this mean for us as a spiritual community? Well, our first behavior under spiritual growth is embracing the wholeness, abundance, and wisdom that we all have. We open a space to support everyone on his or her individual path toward ever-expanding spiritual growth. Now that means first we have to each individually grow spiritually. We have to embrace our own wholeness, abundance, wisdom, strength, and all the rest. Then, as a spiritual community, we come together to see beyond any human issues, and human issues we have, but we see beyond any of that to a greater reality. We behold the Christ in one another and recognize others' spiritual gifts. Now, one of the most important things I learned in my years of teaching both children and adults was to look for and name people's strengths. It's really powerful. I actually told my grandson this week when we were talking about wolves, I said to him, "You are an animal expert." And his little face just lit up, you know, and he said to me, "I am an animal expert." And I said, "Yes, you are." And you know, just hearing somebody name your strengths can be very powerful. I know this firsthand because last September, I was at a conference with Linda Martell-Whitsitt, and she asked for a volunteer to come forward to model a prayer process, to be the person with whom she was going to pray. Well, obviously, I failed that moment at one of my talents, which is looking invisible when necessary, because she called on me. I mean, she said, "Jan, will you come forward?" And I'm going, "Who's Jan? You know, it can't be me." So there I was in front of all these people. She sat me down in a chair. And before she asked me what my prayer intention was, she looked right in my eyes and she said, "Jan, I know something about you. I know something about you. You are strength and wisdom." Well, I'm here to tell you, I don't think I ever felt as strong and wise as I did in that moment with her looking in my eyes and saying that to me. And this is the power of helping one another remember who and what we are. Charles Fillmore wrote, "You are on this earth to be all that you can imagine God to be." That's not just some of us. That's not just a chosen few. That's every single one of us has these inherent spiritual powers. Now, those of you who attended the Spiritual Gifts Workshop a couple weeks ago may remember this slide, that we are not in coherence, or I should say when, we are not in coherence, not aligned with our true divine nature, we can experience dissatisfaction, resignation, and upset. We just feel off-centered. Anybody ever have days when you just feel a little off-centered? And sometimes that just means we're not aligned. We're not aligned with the Christ of our being. However, when we do express our true nature, our lives are filled with satisfaction, expansion, fulfillment, and joy. So there's great reward in aligning with our true nature. Our next community behavior is we teach and practice spiritual principles that inspire us to look beyond human conditions to claim our greater good. One of Jesus' most common teachings, besides the kingdom of heaven being within, one of the other most common teachings and many of his demonstrations was focused on looking beyond earthly situations to a greater reality, looking past what you see and knowing that there's a whole greater realm. As Reverend Michael Beckwith reminds us, Jesus was a master of spiritual discernment, intuitive perception of the real, real with a capital R. He saw perfect spiritual virtue where the crowd saw an adulteress. Remember the story of the woman at the well? He saw perfect health in the physically afflicted when he told the lame to walk, commanded withered limbs to be made whole, and told the blind to see. Where others saw a lack of food, he saw an abundance of loaves and fishes. And when his dear friend Lazarus was lying seemingly lifeless before Jesus, he regenerated the life force of the spirit within Lazarus. Some of you studied that book a couple years ago. And in that case of Lazarus, Jesus even gave what the Gifalos call in that book upfront thanks. Remember that? He thanked God in advance. Lazarus is lying there looking dead as a doornail, and Jesus thanks God for restoring Lazarus to life. And he is able to do that because he fully realizes his at-one-ment with the Father. He was not praying to a distant judgmental God somewhere up in the sky to grant him a favor or miracle. He knew that as a spiritual being having a human experience, he could draw from absolute wholeness, absolute abundance, absolute love, and bring all of those absolutes into the relative realm. And Jesus told us, "These things I do, you can do, and greater things than these, what? You can do." Absolutely. So our final community behavior is, as a spiritual community, we make decisions from our inner Christ, contributing to the well-being of one another and to the world. Now, at our board meetings, we frequently ask each other the question, is this idea, this thought, this decision, this goal, is it aligned in spiritual principle? And actually, this community behavior does not just refer to the board, it refers to all of us. All the decisions we make at First Unity need to be made from our Christ nature, contributing to the greater good of ourselves, to this church, the community, and the world. And finally, let's look at our individual behaviors. Now again, these are the ones the committee generated. You're free to think of your own around the idea of spiritual growth, but here are some possibilities. I engage in metaphysical Bible interpretation, seeing my own soul's evolution in the characters, places, and events in the Bible. Charles Fillmore taught us to view the Bible as the story of our own soul spiritual growth from human consciousness to divine consciousness, like the ladder. And next, to develop increased spiritual understanding, I read and listen to spiritual material, engage in daily prayer and meditation, and attend classes. It's through these practices and others like them that we transcend our outer personal perception and come to see not with physical eyesight, but with spiritual insight. And finally, as the realization of my divine identity evolves, I align my thoughts, words, and actions with the absolute goodness of God. Thought by thought, word by word, act by act, Each of us is climbing Jacob's ladder. Or I guess more accurately, I should say, each of us is climbing our own ladder to higher and higher consciousness. And just know that as you exit the sanctuary today, the ushers will have copies of all of our core values in a little trifold if you would like to take one. Help yourself, okay? So, in the end, one of my favorite philosophers, Charles Schulz, got it right. Charlie Brown asks, what do you think you'd like to be when you grow up? And Linus says, outrageously happy. And which of us doesn't, right? Michael Beckwith says, each of us is in reality training, not the kind of reality you think of in terms of a computer simulation or even crisis simulation, but the reality of looking to that absolute realm. And he says, the length of time it takes us to wake up to the real, again with a capital R, is our own responsibility. There's no external force that judges us or interferes with our awakening. But the longer we postpone it, the longer we delay our happiness and our joy. And that's important for us to remember. And the good news is, the divine has already given each one of us every single thing we need for our ever-evolving spiritual growth, and we have each other for support in that process, and so it is. So let's take a moment today with just really thinking about these words that we affirm every single week, the words that lead us into prayer and meditation. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent. And so it is.